This episode of An Unexpected Podcast is brought to you by you. Even if you didn't know it, it was brought to you by you. Thank you. Hello, friends, and welcome to An Unexpected Podcast. I'm Lane, and Lane means me, and I'm talking Tolkien. That's right. Daddy's not here. Daddy's not here. Old Daddy is. He can't save you. He can't help you. You're stuck. You're stuck with Smeagol Smith in the pits of Angband. Just joking. That's... I could have made a Jamie Dornan joke there, but I didn't think that would be entirely above board. I'm talking Tolkien, okay? We're coming to you from the Shire of America in the beautiful state of Ohio in a little village called Yeah, dude, NFL draft style. It's in the background. It's going on. What will the Cleveland Browns do? Will they take someone valuable at pick six, or will they trade down? God only knows. Even God doesn't know, okay? Because God cares not for the Cleveland Browns. This episode, we're going straight rapture on yo bottom, on the Middle Earth bottoms, and catching up with the left behind. Oh, I see what I did there. The left behind. Yeah. The ones who either went and came back and thought, oh, I can't leave. I can't go back there. Or the ones who said, I'm good. I like this Middle Earth. It's pretty, it's dope. Can you blame them? I don't know. This chapter, we see what the rest of the Firstborn have been up to. We go back in time. We're catching up with the Sindarin. I say it both ways. I feel like it's just kind of, am I feeling more like a Mandarin orange or do I want some cinnamon? It depends. And that's the flavor I tend to see the Sindarin or the Sindarin in. And I don't care which way it is. And I don't care if you care. I do. Okay, I'm lying. That's a defense mechanism. I do care if you care, but I honestly don't really care. So I will do my best. And if I do both, then I'm 50% right. So check that out. Yeah, we're going to see what they've been up to. You know, Mr. John Elway throwing tutties. Raising girdles, no doubt, in chapter 10 of the Silmarillion in, what I just said. It's of the Sindar, okay? We're going to be getting to know everything that happened with them. I do think it's funny that, as you know, last chapter says, man, that's just like Lane Smith to leave me the biggest, most complicated chapter on my own. And I think to myself, dude, I gave you one, yes, and did you see him complaining in the long run? No. He loved every second of it. He loves this stuff. He's the Tolkien tutor, man. He's the underpaid scholar of Middle-earth, and he's recognized, but he's underpaid. I think the flannel is this thing that other people sort of use against him, and they shouldn't. Flannel's not like a commentary on your status. If anything, it should be points towards a higher status. There shouldn't be status. Whatever. Anyway, he was complaining about last chapter. He actually loved it. I got into this chapter and I thought, oh my gosh, dude, for my ADHD brain, this is the last place you want Lane wandering around. Like literally the entirety of Beleriand. We're like over here in Norgod and over there in Belagost and up here in Falas and Menegroth, and there's Angband. You want some Angband? Have some Angband. You know, it's all over the place. So anyway, I will give you a heads up for the chapter. Get yourself a map. The Lord of the Rings map project is online. It's incredible. That's what I used. I also had trouble listening to this one. I've been trying to just kind of listen to the chapters, and if time allows, I can dig into the actual book. This one, I don't know. When there's a lot of names, there's a lot of places, I can listen to it, but my brain just goes, whoa, overload. Let's think about, oh, I got to do dishes. Okay. I got to go get that thing to work on the thing for the house. Oh, shoot, man. Wow. No, I'm not going to buy that. Don't buy that. Don't go search for memorabilia from Lord of the Rings cast and crew. Don't do that on eBay. Okay. My mind just goes a million places, right? And also, sorry about the coughing. I'm on the verge of death. I've been sick for about a month. You know, it's one of those things you'd start telling people, I've been sick for a year, 2 years. Last year was my big year of getting, then you get freaking knocked out. So I have more of a voice tonight than I did last night. But yeah, the mucus has been flowing. I've been just this disgusting ball of, I don't know, germs, viral toxicity, Molotov cocktail. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, I found that I needed to read the actual chapter, like in the physical book. I found that I needed to listen to it ahead of time, you know, just to kind of prime my brain. And then I needed the map, along with that, just to be able to navigate, be like, okay, what are they talking about? Where is this place? You know, because Beleriand, especially for me, I'm not a Silmarillion guy. I'm not a first year, year of the trees, all this stuff, year of Morgoth's, you know, penance type of guy. So Beleriand is like a very new place for me. And so when people drop areas, you know, the Ered Golgoroth, I'm like, yeah, I don't know, man. I'm not, is that next to Subway? Like, I need some sort of context for that. So, but I did find that very, very helpful. Yeah. So anyway, a little bit of quick counsel there, a little bit of talking shop. I'm going to try and keep it pretty on topic here, which I know is not my forte. I know it's also not my brand. That's not really the sort of the vibe I bring. You know, as is the guy who's more kind of laser focused and, you know, come on, Lane, let's get back to the text, quit being a toque. But I'm just going to try and just give you the meat, give it to you raw and wriggling, you know, sort of a deal. Something like that. And you know, hopefully it'll be a nice change or just another flavor of an unexpected podcast. It's always unexpected. So I've been sick. Yeah. It's been gross. But, yeah, you know, you want these chapters, we're going to give them to you. Rain or shine, in sickness and in health, till death do us part, which honestly feels pretty close at times. The weirdest thing about this one is I've been having chest pains, and I'm like, gosh dang, have I smoked one too many cigarettes? I don't know. I mean, guys, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? When you find things you love, what are you going to do with that? Huh? Fingal, when he's, I'm not comparing Melian to a Winston Gold 100, but Fingal's wandering through. He saw something he loved. He saw someone he loved. Well, she's a plant, so I don't know. How's that work? She's a Maya. Anyway, he wasn't stopped, dude. He didn't just go, well, you know, loving someone out of your league is probably bad for you. All right. I can relate, bro. And I'm not talking about the cigarettes anymore. I'm talking about my wife. So I don't know. Things like that, you know, what are you going to do? You got to live life, baby. I'm not here for a long time. I'm here for a good time. Oh, wow, Lane, that's so irresponsible. It probably is. And that's okay. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, I'm on the up and up. I got a steroid. I'm on the prednisone. I'm on that little inhaler, taking the puffs of the, gosh, what's it called? Nuclear homicide. I can't remember what it's called. It's like the albuterol. Jeez. Taking puffs of that. And I got a Z-Pack in the back. So if I need to go full-on nuclear, you know, destruction of my gut, microbiome, I can. I'd rather not. And I get sick when I do those, but we'll just see what happens. Yeah, what's life been like? It's been crazy. It's been busy. It's been a very strange month since I recorded last, I think. Might be longer than that. Might have been like 6 weeks. I don't know. It's been weird. and hard. And I think I was going to do a big, long spiel, you know, because, again, we always like to – I know that some people don't like quick counsel, and that's fine. But we've always tried to be as honest as possible because either – you know, maybe there's someone out here, just one person who needs to hear our honesty and openness. Maybe there's a bunch of people that do. Maybe there's a person or a bunch of people that we need to hear it in the future. You know, maybe we, me and Ez, like ourselves, will need to hear this in the future. That's one of those things that we think about is it could even be for us, you know, selfishly, you never know. But anyway, I don't know. I don't think it's the energy right now. And I think really the gist of it, to keep it short, was just to believe in yourself. You know, I really, really think that's something that is, I don't know, I think it's kind of overused. And because of that, it feels sort of insincere. Believe in yourself, Terry Pohl from Short Poppies. If you have not seen Short Poppies, please do your favor. Please do your favor. Do yourself a favor and go listen. Gosh, no, it's a TV show. Go watch on Prime. I think it's still there. It's a Rhys Darby New Zealand show. It's on Terry Pohl, Legs 11, Pohl Juice. Yeah, believe in yourself. Believe in yourself. It's important to believe in yourself. It gets kind of, I think, stripped of its power when we say it all the time. You know, we don't really stop and think about it. But when you're in hard times and you feel like, man, even the people who I thought believed in me haven't really either been communicating that lately, or I don't really think that they do. Believe in yourself. Remember that, like, bank on yourself. Like, give yourself some credit. I think a lot of us are self-deprecating too. I'm like the biggest one. Jake told me today in a voice, he's like, you need to be kind to yourself, bro. And I'm definitely kind to myself. I think I was talking to Matthew Johnson when he was here, man. We had so many great conversations. He was like, Lane, are you an all or nothing kind of guy? And I was like, huh, you know? I think I am. It was such a great, he asked so many great questions and just like rich conversation. I was like, I think I am an all or nothing guy. And I could think of examples in my life where that's true. And so I think, yeah, when I'm feeling good about myself, it's probably too high. And when I feel bad about myself, it's too low. But even when those things are kind of swaying back and forth, believing in yourself and giving yourself some credit and trying to see, I always think about George Bailey, right? Like in, gonna get me, dude. By myself crying. Wow. Anyway, very George Bailey thing to do. He, that moment in the bar before Clarence arrives, and he says, "I wish I never would have been born." You know, he has this prayer too, but it's just like this thing where he wishes he had never been born. And he gets the kind of sobering experience to. I mean, everyone knows this movie. Like, what am I talking about? If you have not seen It's a Wonderful Life, go see it. Anyway, geez, wow. It's one of those things where, yeah, he gets the sobering experience of seeing what the life, the place that he lives, Bedford Falls, or Potter Falls, or whatever it's called, Potter Town. I can't remember what it gets changed. What it gets changed into. But, and you realize, wow, okay, there are good things that I do. But anyway, regardless of what you're feeling from other people, I think it's in those times, especially where you just got to believe in yourself, man. I think about the fellowship, dude, and they believed in each other. They held true to each other, and they also just believed in themselves. It's a good thing. So if you're out there and you're having trouble, you feel like no one's got your back, just know that you can have your own back, man. You can believe in yourself, and you should believe in yourself. And we believe in you, man. We believe in you, girl. We believe in you, lady. We believe in you, child. Like, we believe in you. Don't ever forget it. So, huge shout out to our lords and ladies of Gondolin. We've got Amanda, Susie, Kevin, Aaron, John, and Steve keeping it real in the house of the golden flower. Man, that guy's... That Instagram DM, I mean, if you want to join that level for nothing else, that's worth it. It really is worth it. It's such a fun way to communicate. So huge shout out to them. Their constant support. We love you guys. We love everyone who shows us their support, everyone who listens. Man, it's wild to think like we're, you know, nigh on a decade. It's pretty wild. I mean, we're getting up to 9 years and, you know, better half of it. And it's crazy. It's crazy, especially when you look back at the history of just sticking with it and seeing it through. Pretty amazing. So, but it's all because of you guys, for sure. How can you share the load, man? Well, you can get on Instagram, add up Talking Tolkien, find us, follow some of the goofy posts we make, take part in some of the polls, communicate with us. That's the best way to do it, best place to do it. We've gotten some good reviews lately. Even if you want to go leave us a bad review, go do that. That's fun too. I think it keeps us humble, keeps us hungry, gets a chip on our shoulder, you know, puts a face or a name at least to they or them, which we're always talking about. They said we couldn't do it. Gets us in our baker mode, which I think most people enjoy. We love it. So do that. And just continue, just, you know what? Ask people what they think about all the new developments in Middle Earth. Ask people what they're thinking about Stephen Colbert. Ask people what they're thinking about the Hunferlu. Ask people what they're thinking about 603, Over the Power, Anneau de Papelou. And just have conversations. That's the coolest thing. I know Ez is having a bunch of them. I know he's, God bless him, dude, wearing that Concerning Hobbit sweatshirt every Monday. I think he's just like dicking around, and then he'll like send me a picture, and I'm like, he is actually wearing it. Like, he just, I don't, again, that's the self-deprecating side where I'm like, he probably just uses it as like when he's painting in the bathroom or something or whatever. But it's a huge thing that makes me feel so humbled and honored. So yeah, talk to some people about things going on. Talk to people about Concerning Hobbits. Talk to people about up Talking Tolkien. Talk to people about whatever. You know, Matthew Johnson, we were talking about, dude, he's just, you know, Matthew Olson. Gosh, what's his, hold on a second, I got to find it because I'm following it. His Substack real quick. I can never remember the name. It's like the Literature Review. Nope. It's the Cultural Review. Go check it out. Go follow him. Anyway, we're talking about just all kinds of stuff. He has such an eclectic, like, high level taste, and I'm like, oh yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah, I was supposed to read that in a class, and then I dropped out of the class, kind of deal. But he brought up, we were talking about Viggo Mortensen movies, and then he asked me if I'd ever seen My Dinner with Andre, and I'm like, dude, my only context for My Dinner with Andre is My Dinner with Andre action figures from Waiting for Guffman. In the post-credit scenes, and I had never, it was a joke to me because of that movie, you know, like action figures for a movie where people have a dinner. And he's like, dude, it's really, really good. So I sat down and I watched it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, man, I had to watch it in like two halves, but it's so relevant for what's going on now. There's so many like bits of commentary where like this could have been written last week, talking about the disconnection from nature and the reliance on technologies in the modern world and the comforts of what we have and how that can kind of disrupt your connection to the earth and to the natural world and even to other human beings. And it was great. So anyway, talk about something that gets you going, that stimulates you. Time to drop some eaves. Time to drop some eaves. I don't have any Steves, so I can't drop some Steves. Yeah, baby. Stephen Matthew, Stephen Schroeder, just always filling our brains with these updates. It's crazy. We really are going to change the segment to dropping Steve's, honestly. Amazon show news, as thought, 2027. Well, Mr. Kirk. Go back and check the tape, but I think I was pretty confident in saying, nah. It might not be September, but we're getting it. We're getting it in 2026. They're not going to be in the same year as Hunt for Gollum. They're not going to let that happen. They're going to get it out so that we can, be distracted or, I don't know, whatever. Enjoy it. That's what I meant. Enjoy the show. So it is. This is just newly, I think the last couple of days, sort of breaking news that, yeah, it's coming out this year. They haven't said when, but 2026 is the year for season 3. Of the Rings of Power. We've also got some interesting kind of updates. It's pretty confirmed, I believe, that Palando is going to be in this one, one of the Blue Wizards. Blue, if I mispronounced your name there. And there's going to be a fun spin on Three's Company, believe it or not. We've got a Arondir, we've got Lady Galadriel, and an orc are going to be hitting the road together. Who knows? Maybe he'll probably persuade them, or she, persuade them to fight the orc, the orc fight, you know, the fight for the orcs, getting them a home. And when all's said and done, I don't know, maybe. Sorry for the sniffling, guys. I'm doing my best. It's either that or blowing my nose, and both are not good. I could edit it out, but where's the fun in that? Huh? Unedited, unfiltered. Raw. There's some other things I can't remember. I think that they've sort of updated lately, but it'll come to me or it won't, and I, no one will really even know, honestly. So, yeah, Rings of Power. It's here to stay, baby. Get excited. Hunt for Gollum news. Lots coming out. A really massive announcement from WB. We all had the hood pulled over our eyes. It turns out that Leo Woodall will be playing a Dúnedain Ranger of the North, but not the one we thought. He's going to be playing a character called Halvard or Harvard or something like that. And we have a Strider. A new Strider, but really it's just finally like an officially confirmed Strider. So apologies for my certainty before when that was just a rumor that I was pushing. And even as was like, well, is this confirmed? I'm like, yeah. Easy, dude. Just get the news out. It doesn't matter if the news is right. Just get it out, okay? This is 2026, bro. That's what we do. But Jamie Dornan. Yeah. 50 Shades of the Grey Company, baby. Woo! Daggum. Bind me and spank me. I've been a bad boy for believing your lies. I swear to serve the master of the handcuffs. Woo! This was interesting. I did tell... I came in excited about this news, and I told my roommates, Dina and Robin, and... Dina is like my age. Robin is more like my mom's age. And I expected to drop that name and maybe Dina would know who Jamie was and that Robin wouldn't. And I was like, yeah, Jamie Dornan, he's the guy from, I guess I did follow it up with, he's the guy from 50 Shades of Grey. And Robin goes, oh. I was like, dang, okay. Well, we know what kind of, fun, juicy media Robin is into. And I just thought it was really funny. So hopefully she's not embarrassed by me saying that, but I thought it was great. It's cool, man. You know, he's one of those guys, like, I think he's known for that, and it's kind of a shame that he's known for that. Now, if you like those movies, that's cool. If you like the books, that's fine. No problem. Just be of age, you know. But it's kind of a shame because he's a really great actor. And I had forgotten what it was called, the series, and then I can't remember who commented. I'm so sorry. There was a back and forth on our post on this, and someone was like, seriously, the 50 Shades for Grey guy? And a commenter said, an upper said, check out The Fall. It's incredible. And I was like, that's what it was called. It's this kind of psychological thriller TV show, maybe like 5-10, it might have been 10 years ago, with Gillian Anderson, Scully from The X-Files. And it's so good, and he plays just an absolute, let's just say he's got a duality. He's got a, it's very honestly, ironically, kind of Smeagol Gollum. Like, he has a very good side and a very evil, dark side, and he's able to maintain both of these lives with like, terrifying conviction. It's crazy. So, you watch him in something like that, and you're like, oh, okay, this guy's got chops. He's Irish, too. We all know that, like, you know, if you're an Irish actor, you're solid, bro. I mean, you just are. I don't know. Like, they just really know how to do drama and comedy, and they know how to entertain and perform just in general. If I can make that generalization to my Irish brethren, if that's offensive, I'm sorry. Only the highest compliment. I don't know. Has the potential, anyway, to be a redemption arc for the Irish people in the role of Aragorn, Stuart Townsend. But anyway, so the other kind of eerie thing is, like, I don't think he's someone that anyone was thinking about. I was like so shocked by that. And then I was like, hang on a minute. His like triangle is exactly the same, dude. And his chin is even kind of reminiscent of Vigo's. His teeth are way different, right? We don't have those beautiful, gappy, like spacious, you know, gum nuggets that Vigo has. But let him live. Just don't smile or open your mouth too much, Jamie. Which he might not be if he's Strider. He's going to be serious all the time. He ain't going to be laughing, you know, especially hunting for Gollum. That's like the pits, dog. Can you imagine hunting for...
Aragorn, I need a favor.
Okay.
Help me find the creature, Gollum.
Are you serious?
Like, that would suck, dude. So, anyway. The triangle is the same. Like, I've seen mock-ups, these AI mock-ups, whatever. I don't love it, but... even without them, you can look at him with like stubble and think, yeah, dude, he might, he, I think he's going to be able to kind of pull this off. Like if you squint, he looks like Vigo. That was not the case with Leo. No offense. Right. I was thinking of an analogy, and this one's unfortunate because it's going to make it sound like I'm bashing Leo. I'm not. So let's open it with, in this analogy, I am, or analogy in this, I don't know. I don't even know what you call it. Thing. It's this example, all right? I would be like a broken skateboard or something, or like a unicycle or whatever, compared to these guys, because they're both handsome men, talented, lovely dudes. So just keep that in mind when I make this kind of comparison. I'm a spare tire or something. Like, okay, I'm not bashing anyone, but it's kind of like you go to get your car rental, you do the Honda Civic, you walk in, and they say, hey, you know, actually, free upgrade. Any, you know, more expensive car is yours. You're due for it. This is, I think, Matthew Johnson inspired this. This illustration. And so then you go out and you're like, well, I'll take the Land Rover, of course. It's sort of like we went from a Honda Civic to a Land Rover, really, in terms of what Strider we were going to get, who we were going to get to play Strider. And I think, honestly, that's made me more excited. It's been like, okay, that's a pleasant surprise. It's not going to match. It's not going to be the same. But maybe it'll be kind of like close enough to halfway enjoy. Yeah. So anyway, we also have Kate Winslet. She's going to be playing Mary Goal, not Mary Gold, which is interesting. It's almost like they forgot the D or something. Mary Goal. Mary Gold is one of Sam's younger sisters. Who is featured in Concerning Hobbits, season one, by the way. And, this is probably the name they're giving her for, you know, Gollum's egg-sucking grandma. So, I don't remember that, I really don't remember that riddle, but I did ask Jake because he used it. We were in an episode, he was like, sorry if I'm telling you how to suck eggs. And I was like, the frick? What? Has he been listening to me? I was just wondering where that, if that expression was like, cause Tino brought that up and I was like, suck eggs. And I was like, what is that? That's a Britishism, right? Like it's what is that? I could look it up, but what does that mean? What's that idiom? And he was like, oh, it just means like, I'm sorry if I'm teaching you something you already know. And it came from back in the day when like people who didn't have teeth, usually elderly people, would poke a hole in an egg and suck it out, you know? So anyway, hopefully she does teach him that. Hopefully we get to see Kate Winslet sucking some eggs. That would be, yeah, anyway. I thought the announcement was kind of cheap, and I felt validated because Jake said the same thing. It was just like a screen grab from the Fellowship. You know, the famous kind of first image we get of Gollum, and maybe that's the point. But I was like, what, dude? Like, this is like, even if you're going for like, oh, this is the same time as what the movie's going to take place in. It's like, no, it's not. This is, that's Gollum pre-Hobbit. Like, why is that? Couldn't we have done something a little more artistic? I don't know. It felt very kind of like slapdash, but whatever. I still don't even know what font they're using. I haven't really caught up to that or paid attention to that. But anyway, that's what it is, okay? Let's get into some other corners of Middle-earth. Yeah, you know, Real quick update on the Red Book of Westmarch. Chapter 1, Part 2, Final Cut will be coming very soon. Jake's working up, working on some final touches, and it's going to be done and dusted. And then all of Chapter 1 will be completed in its final state. It's pretty cool. Actually, Part 1 will be re-released as well with a couple little updates that things we got. I listened to it enough with the kids. That my kids are always, especially Winnie and Charlotte, Ruth too, but they're always wanting to listen to the radio drama, like before bed, the same episodes over and over again. Now they have like their little MP3 players and they want to listen to it on there. It's incredible. It's literally a dream come true and they love it. And so as a result, I've listened to the first chapter like a ton. And there were a couple things in Part 1 where I'm like, I kind of missed a couple things like that I need to put in. Just little additions that I think will enhance it even more. And so it's going to be re-released with those, which is very exciting. And again, to have someone like Jake who is open to working like that, good luck finding someone like that, you know, he's one in a million, man. One in a billion. So we also have a post-production sound team that's kind of growing now, which is very exciting. So Arthur, Jake's mate from university and good friend, and also in sound design and editing and all this stuff, has joined our group. So now we got the Power 3, which is pretty awesome. We're calling ourselves the Pointed Ears sound effects team. So huge shout out to him joining us, and much thanks to him being a part of our project. It'll really, I think, speed things up in terms of getting episodes out. Not being hasty, not trying to just push them out fast because we can, but because we're kind of ready to. Like almost all of Chapter 2 is done. It's just waiting for the availability to kind of work on cleaning up the audio, building it out, finishing a couple parts, and then it'll be right on to Chapter 3 and Chapter 4. And, you know, it's like they're all ready. Even a lot of roles have been recorded for some of these extra parts. Another thing, too, that we're going to be doing is a spot fund. So we're going to be doing a fundraiser. If I have it up in time, I'll put it in this description, episode description. If not, we'll put it out on another episode. But Ez has been kind of poking my ribs for a while, and he's like, dude, what do you think about a fundraiser? What do you think about a fundraiser? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I feel right. I was like, I almost don't want it to come from me. It's going to feel weird. He was like, dude, just do it. I'll do it for you. I was like, okay. So we're going to do a spot fund, and the spot fund is going to be a way for you to become essentially a producer on Concerning Hobbits. What we need is more equipment. So most of our recording is done at a distance, which requires recording packages to be sent to people recording in, you know, California or Colorado or Michigan or Kentucky or Florida or New Zealand, you know, whatever. And we only have two of them right now. And it's just enough to, you know, be able to move around at a fair clip, but not enough to get... There's just a lot of downtime. There's a lot of downtime and kind of waiting for, because, you know, people might get a package and they might think it's the right time. And then it's like, you know, a few weeks go by and it's like their life is busy. And again, that's the thing with this is it's a passion project. It's not, we're not paying people. No one's like, we're not, and none of us are like quote unquote professionals, even though we're putting out a professional level product and story and radio drama. But, you know, we have our own lives too. And so, if we had more of those, it would allow us to send more of them out at a time and just, you know, exponentially increase the output and get a lot of these roles that people have been reading and waiting on for a while to get them recorded. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to try to raise money to go 100% towards just more equipment so that we can facilitate this project. The other thing is the project is growing too, like more roles all the time, more people coming in. It's unbelievable. It's really is. I mean, I sound like I'm just, again, tooting my own horn to use as is parlance, but it really, it's true. And if you'd like to be a part of it too, hit us up. We're always looking for new people to take on roles and additional actors and actresses. And even if it's just, I want to be an orc, it's cool. Yeah. Either come on out or we'll send you a package, do some orc sounds and send it back. Like that's, We love that kind of stuff. So anyway, also Matthew Johnson recorded here in the Shire for episode 4. His lines as Fastred, and the performances were unbelievable. It was so cool to, you know, someone I've talked to for years at a distance, and, you know, gotten to listen to an edit from a distance, for us to be able to like be right next to each other and just going through stuff. It was amazing. I wish I could record with everyone in person. It's just not possible, but that would be like, when I get the chance to, I'm like, gosh, I wish I could do this with everyone. It is just so cool. And it helps me too. Like, it helps me see characters in the story in a new way that I wouldn't have otherwise. And so it's mutually beneficial, beautiful. I don't want to get too crazy, but it's like a spiritual experience. So huge shout out to Matthew for coming out and just being able to hang with the family too. It was just, those are my favorite moments of us, you know, him hanging out with my kids and my wife and my dog and stuff, and just being in the backyard, cracking open a book while I helped, you know, with the kids, and so patient, so kind, a rare human being, truly Fastred. He truly is Fastred. He doesn't even know it. So yeah. Our other friends, go check out their projects. I'm not going to read them all, but I am going to put links in the description so that people can go support all of our wonderful friends that are doing incredible things. Hey, 36 minutes and we're into the read-through. Didn't think it was going to happen, did you, baby? Huh? You didn't think it was going to happen. I can't promise you quality, but it's here quick. All right? I'm the Bojangles of, you know, Middle Earth. Let's do a little quick summary for this chapter, chapter 10 of the Sindar. So this details the peaceful and prosperous era in Beleriand, where the Teleri elves, the Sindar, which they become known as, stayed behind, becoming wise and skilled under King Thingol, the old gray mantle brother, and his queen Melian. They build Metagroth. They make alliances with dwarves. They actually get to meet dwarves, which is incredible. This is a very brief summary. And face growing threats from Melkor as he comes on back to Middle-earth after getting kicked out of, you know, the Holy Lands. So there's really cool key events. I'm not going to read these. I didn't realize I had these in here, but I am going to just dig right into it. We get the peak of the Sindar civilization. Before the return of Morgoth, and then kind of establishing, really kind of setting the board is what it felt like to me. Setting the board, putting the pieces on, and getting ready for a bit of a battle. So I'm going to grab my book. We're getting into it. I'm also going to pull up the map real quick. Again, like I said before, the Lord of the Rings map project, been around for a long time. I don't know who's in charge of this thing, man. But it's really, really cool, and now I can't find it. Come on now, brother. And it's a labor of love, I would say, for somebody. It's really, really cool. I could look it up. That would also be really good, but, you know, why would I do that? I'll have you guys go do that and enjoy that yourself. But they even have, like, paths you can put on here. You can choose to follow different people as they go through. And there's one of, you know, Middle-earth, and there's one of Beleriand, which is really, really cool. So, here it is. It's going to be very helpful. And it is for you as you're reading as well. If you're like me anyway, it's a nice kind of anchor into what's like brief references in the chapter. So let me get my book. Let's go. It was right next to me. Oh, my gosh. Oh, you silly guy. You silly Sindar. You silly silver elf. Little goofy guy. It's the wrong freaking sheet. Where'd I put the other one? There it is. Okay. Yeah, chapter 10, man. I'm glad I kept my Eldar 3x5 card. You know, the Kalaquendi, the Moraquendi, the Umanyar, even the Avari came in handy. You know, the Vanyar, the Noldor, the Teleri. I got a little confused. I'm not gonna be, you know, a phony here. Why start now? There are definitely moments where I was like, before I actually read it and I was listening, I'm like, God, who are we talking? Like, I knew there was a Denethor coming up, but like, it still shocked me. I'm like, do his kids know he's this old? Like, how old's Boromir and Faramir or whatever? What are they called? What do they know? They might not even know. So this chapter opens. We're going back in time, right, from Ez's chapter in chapter 9. We're going way back. We have to experience the same time frame in Beleriand that we just experienced in Valinor, right? We just got all of the drama from sort of, you know, the trees and Feanor, and then the lies of Melkor, and then the darkening of the trees, the killing of the trees, and then Melkor being cursed and renamed Morgoth and fleeing with and Goliant, right? And then them coming to Middle-earth, sort of escaping. So we're going back to run parallel with the noontide that's happening in Valinor, and we're going to experience that time onward in Beleriand and really kind of catch up. It syncs up the end of chapter 10, syncs up with the end of chapter 9. So really just filling in the gaps, you know. Tolkien was like, yeah, I got to tell both these stories. I don't know exactly what his thinking was, obviously. Maybe he's like, yeah, I got to tell one side of it and then the other side of it. I think it's kind of cool, too, how it's done, you know, because it is sort of in the same way that they would have been. I think about the Teleri elves that were just kind of waiting for Elwë, right? And it's like, dude, and like some of them moved on, right? Some of them went into the West, and a lot of them just kind of waited. They're like, I guess we'll just wait here till he shows up or whatever. So there's a lot of just kind of unknown and mystery and waiting. And I think that this sort of parallels that in the structure of the Silmarillion as well, which is really cool. So yeah, we get this sort of the setup, the Beleriand bros, man. We got Elwë, who's renamed King Fingal, King Greymantle, and we've got Melian, his queen, the Maia. They have prosperity, and their rule is fruitful. It's a really interesting time because at the beginning of this chapter is still during Melkor's he's being locked up, right? It's during his, God, what's it called, man? Like, he's exiled, right? It's when he's chained up. And so there's no real threat of danger. And in the same way that prosperity happened in Valinor, it happens here as well. Yeah, so it's their power is increasing in all of Middle-earth and all elves, you know, from the mariners of Círdan to the wandering hunters of the Blue Mountains. They all call Elwë or King Fingal their lord. They are called the Sindar Elves because of this twilight, right? Because they, for the most part anyway, Fingal anyway, went and saw the light of the trees and came back and then decided to stay. So they're not like the elves, the Avari, who just said, now we're never going to go, we're good. And they're not like the Noldor, right? Or the Vanyar, who went and returned to Valinor. They saw the light, but they weren't bright enough, man. They want to stay here in Middle-earth. So that's why they're called the Grey Elves. That's why they're called the Sindar, the Sindarin Elves. It talks about Beleriand being kind of lit in this starlight. You almost kind of wonder like what the lighting was like. I imagine like a twilight filter, like from the movie Twilight, that blue light that was kind of all the way on. I mean, this is before the sun and the moon, right? I can't remember exactly what it talked about, but the light of the trees, is it reaching this far? I would say probably not, you know? So there's this starlight that is ever around them. Melian's incredible. Even though the Grey Elves are more Aquendi under the lordship of Fingal and the teaching of Melian, they became the fairest and the most wise and skillful of all the elves in Middle Earth. And this is really cool because as this kind of noontide is happening in Valinor, Luthien is born. So she comes about during this same, it's almost like the peak of Valinor was the Silmarils, the crafting of the Silmarils, and then the peak of Middle-earth is the birth of Lúthien. And kind of interesting, too, how their fates are sort of intertwined, or later on they'll be connected anyway. And I thought to myself, I'm like, dude, is this happening at the same time? It kind of felt like it, at least in terms of his illusions, that they're like, maybe the Silmarils were crafted at the same relative time that Lúthien was born. It's only about a 200-year gap. So I think the Silmarils were wrought first, and then like a couple hundred years Lúthien is born. But I mean, like, in elven time, isn't that kind of like a couple minutes later? I mean, really, like, what is the difference? It doesn't seem like it's that big of a difference. So two monumental, like, peak level events happening almost at the same time, which is pretty cool. The world is still, Middle-earth is still in the sleep of Yavanna, so most of the things that are alive are still kind of dormant. But Melian, remember, she's a plant, right? She's one of Yavanna's, you know, girls, ladies. She's able to kind of cultivate life and joy. And it says that the bright stars shone as silver fires, and there in the forest of Neldoroth, Lúthien was born, and the white flowers of Nifredel came forth to greet her as stars from the earth. So stars from the sky and stars from the earth. So freaking cool, man. Like, it's just, it's a beautiful description of the world. Beautiful description of the world. Then we get the dwarves. Finally, the true firstborn are getting their proper first, well, I guess not, yeah, their first proper introduction, I guess you could probably say, right? They were woken up and put to sleep, created, woken up and put to sleep real fast. But here they come, all right? Here they come. And this is in the second age of the captivity of Melkor. So we're getting closer to his return, but we're still kind of in a safe zone. Still kind of in a safe zone. So dwarves, they're coming over the blue mountains of Ered Luin into Beleriand. They call themselves, this is where we get all these cool names and like references, and like so much of Tolkien's language is on display here to a dizzying extent. And that's why I think it helps to read it. The dwarves call themselves Khazad, right? The Sindar called them Nogrim, which means stunted people. Jeez, dude, come on. They're just shorties, bro. And also Gonhirim, which means masters of stone. So cool. Gonhirim. And then I always think, like, obviously you read that, you're like Rohirrim, same kind of origins. So the masters of stone. They're way out in the east, man. They're like in proper third age Middle Earth zone, like Eriador and the Misty Mountains and the Vales of the Anduin. It's crazy. So they've been at it. It doesn't really say when they woke, which is interesting, unless it says that somewhere else and I just absolutely totally missed it. It might have said the last chapter and I just didn't finish Ez's chapter. Just joking. I listened to all of it. But they've been hard at work. They've been building them these great halls and mansions in the eastern side of the Ered Luin, which over by the Blue Mountains, okay? So sort of the, if you're looking at the map of Beleriand, that's sort of the easternmost edge. Because the Blue Mountains are after the reshaping of the world and the flooding of Beleriand, the Blue Mountains are still there. They're a part of the world that are, just into the west, westernmost edge of Middle-earth. They've got these really beautiful cities. The one that they call Gabelgathel is Belagost, the elves call.
You're on a GLP-1. Your appetite is changing, your cravings quiet down, and food noise is finally fading. But now you're wondering, how do I manage my side effects? What do I eat to stay strong? How do I break through a plateau? Because reaching your weight loss goals can take more than meds. That's where Weight Watchers Med Plus comes in. The support designed to help you navigate what comes next. With trusted experts who guide you, food plans that work with your body, support to help manage side effects, plus access to GLP-1 medication. Weight Watchers Med Plus is designed to help you lose more weight. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com. All medical services are provided through our affiliated medical group, Weight Watchers Clinic. Medications require eligibility and prescription. Individual results may vary. See site for more details.
Belagost. And then Tumanzanar is their name for their city. The elves call it Nogrod. And these are kind of in the east and like two cities that are on the edge of this mountain, Mount Dolmed. And they're right there. Belagost is to the north and Nogrod is to the south. And it's important because they're going to build a road that leads west from those cities that makes their way into Beleriand. The crazy thing is, like, I didn't realize this, man. Moria is around. Okay? You know, at that time it was called, obviously, Khazad-dûm, the Dwer-o-Delph. Another name for it is Had-Hadrond, which is the Elvish name for, Moria. In the Mountains of Mist, they've already, it's just a crazy thought too. Peter Jackson was talking about this, just imagining the, how, you know, in the great halls of Dwer-o-Delph, how they like literally would have carved it, you know, and carved around each one of these pillars. I don't always think that way. I'm like, they carved a big spot or found a big empty spot and they just put the pillars in afterwards. And it's like, no, dude, they literally crafted all around that. Like, it started as just chipping into rock, and then it turned into a little hand-sized hole, and then a cave, and then it was this great underground kingdom, which is amazing. Okay, so this is what I had a question. I didn't understand this. I was like, man, if we're going that far east, is this where, like, I'm thinking about, like, Khazad-dûm. Is that where, I wonder, is that, like, where Aule would have laid them back to go to sleep? Like, would they have woken up in the Misty Mountains in that area? I don't know if we ever know that, but it was kind of a cool thought. I'm like, I wonder if, they woke up and they just started digging and there was Khazad-dûm, you know? I don't know. Who's to know? They come forth and the elves are blown away. They're like, whoa, the heck is going on? We thought we were the only things around here who could talk and make things and, you know, act civilized and whatnot. They were kind of like dumbfounded, cause they thought they were the only ones that, you know, spoke with words, is what Tolkien said, or wrought with hands, and that all or the others were but birds and beasts, and they could understand no word of the dwarven tongue, which to their ears was cumbrous and unlovely. Gosh, dude, what? Just such an elven thing to say or think, you know, not like put a positive spin on it. It's cumbrous and unlovely. And I thought this was so cool, right? The Eldar, like, on a wider scale, like, don't really bother learning Dwarvish, and the dwarves almost kind of prefer it this way. They're like, that's cool. No, actually, we'll learn Elvish. Don't worry about it. We'll learn Elvish, and we'll talk to you that way. And that way, you know, don't bother with Dwarvish. So that way we can talk about you behind your back and, you know, sort of like curse you without you understanding it, which is awesome. I think that's such a dwarven thing to do. Like, yeah, we'll learn your language. We'll be able to keep our secrets. We'll all be happy. You know, you think our speech is ugly anyway, so why don't you just stick to your little, your elven tongue? So they're very swift to learn and more willing. You know, that was really kind of cool that they were more willing to teach their own, indeed, they were more willing to, I'm trying to read at the same time, to learn the elven tongue than to teach their own tongue to an alien race, right? Of course, they wouldn't want to do that. Makes no sense for them. There are a couple elves that sort of hang out and visit them. Eol and Meglin, his son, are some of the only elves that kind of like go towards them and hang out with them in the east. But the dwarfs, they move into the west. They move into Beleriand. They make a great road that passed under the shoulders of Mount Dolmed and followed the course of the River Oscar crossing Gelion at Sarn, Athrad, and the Ford of Stones. Again, get that map out. And but when, once you access a map, you can see this. It's right there. It just leads out, follows that river, crosses a bridge, and that's their highway into these realms. And it's also really interesting, too, because at this point, you're looking around, you're like, oh my gosh, there's like just a bunch of wasteland. There's nothing there. We're going to talk about in a minute how at that time the elves were super spread out. I mean, apart from everyone hanging around everyone hanging around King Thingol and Melian in Doriath, and the elves hanging out with Círdan in the Falas, they're all very like sparsely populated. There's no big cities. There's way more room than when we think of Valinor. Like when we were over there, it's like, I don't know, I feel like they're all on top of each other, like to the point of even, you know, the Vanyar saying, we're going to go kiss the boots of Manwë. We'll see you guys later. And so it's very spread out and they feel safe. I think that's the other point too, is they feel safe and they don't feel like they have to like tribalize or whatever, like make these little, you know, regions or whatever. It really feels like a free place that way, which is really kind of beautiful, honestly. This is, again, part of their noontide as well, although it gets dark pretty quickly. Let's see. Their friendship is cool, though. They're not, like, super, you know, best buds, the Nálgrim and the Eldar, so the dwarves and the elves. There's just kind of a distrust there, you know? I mean, you can tell with the way this was written that there were already kind of slights or insinuations. They would have picked up on the fact that they, you know, the elves didn't like their language. You know, likewise, the elves would have been like, okay, they're quick to learn ours. You know, you can kind of see where these sort of divisions come. It's just very interesting that, again, it's the two firstborns, you know, Aule's creation that was created before. And then, you know, Eru, Iluvatar, he spoke about this, how they would be kind of cursed and sort of blamed for stuff because of how they were created in secret and with without kind of like permission from him, I guess, in a sense. So, yeah, but King Thingol's cool, man. That old John Elway really knew how to sling a ball and bring a team together. He welcomes them in. And they gave their friendship more readily. This is very interesting. So they were friends with Thingol as well, but eventually they will give their friendship more to the Noldor than to the Sindar. And that's because they got the same god, man. They got the same religion. They both revere Aule above all else. And they dig each other's creations. They're like, wow, Noldor got some pretty cool gems. And the Noldor will eventually be like, dang, you got some pretty sick armor and swords and weapons and towns and stuff. Like, you guys are doing God's work. You too, bro, doing God's work. So they have that in common. The great works that they've crafted are just marvelous, and their skill with metals and with stone is unmatched. At this time, they're crafting more in iron and copper rather than silver or gold. And I thought that was kind of interesting. I'm like, is that because they're more kind of industrious? You know, when I think of like iron and copper, I think of like you're building tools, you're building, maybe, do they have electricity? Are they running lights in those caves? Like, I don't know, dude. I know you need copper for that. You know, they're more kind of utilitarian things as opposed to ornamental, like silver and gold. We always think of them as, I mean, you could probably ask 20 people and they would all say, ah, jewelry, right? You know, even though we know there are other purposes for silver and gold than that, but they're kind of like a higher form of metallurgy, I would imagine anyway. Have you tried mixing them? So anyway, they really like Melian too, which is, of course, I think just everyone kind of does. She's the plant of all plants, baby. So Melian kind of has this foresight that is akin to Feanor's. She says, like, you know, and this is because she's a Maia. But she, you know, they're in the second age of the captivity of Melkor, and she's sort of like, you know, Thingol, baby, this piece isn't going to last. And there's probably going to be some bad stuff that goes down. And so Thingol's like, shoot, man, well, what do I do here? If things are going to get bad and we're all kind of spread out and everything, and we're sort of just, you know, living in the forest and whatnot, maybe we should consider some sort of safe place to retreat to, right? It's very, I don't know, it's very like, I mean, it's super insightful that he would think this. And so he enlists the dwarves, you know, to build what eventually is Menegroth, his great underground city. You know, there's some really beautiful descriptions I'll read, but it goes on to say that it's the fairest dwelling of any king that has ever been east of the sea, you know, for all time. And we've seen some really cool ones. I think about, you know, Lord of the Rings, there are some amazing cities and palaces, and you look at like the Hobbit and Mirkwood and everything too. That's really beautiful. All those yeah, dwelling places and you know, Lothlorien, and yeah, and then to think that none of them even compare to Menegroth is kind of crazy. And thinking of Gondolin too, like Gondolin is, you see these beautiful paintings of it, and it's like, doesn't even compare. So the dwarves were like, yeah, sure. You know, at that time that it said that they were eager to work and that they weren't so kind of skeptical. They weren't like combative. And so, yeah, they were unwearied, and hungry for new works. They always demand a price though, but it's really interesting because they held themselves paid. Like, this is going to be one of the greatest works in terms of places in Middle Earth and, you know, of all time. And they go into it just being like, now we're clear, we're good. And it's because of the gifts of Thingol and also the gifts of Melian. Melian teaches them much that they're eager to learn. So she's very open and free with her knowledge and just her capabilities as being a Maia and her knowledge and wisdom. And then Thingol gives them all these beautiful pearls, which makes sense because they're afraid to go to the ocean. So pearls are so unique, obviously, to the sea and sea creatures and everything. And so they're stones unlike anything they would have ever found, unless there was like some kind of crazy underwater, you know, lake that they would have come across. And maybe there were some, I don't know, clams that had pearls under there or something. Maybe, I don't know. Is it oysters? I can never remember, guys. Pearls, they, you know, they're in the shell, on a shell. And, yeah, so it goes on to talk about how Círdan is the one who gives these to Thingol, and he gets them in the waters, the shallow waters about the Isle of Balar. But yeah, this is where we get the revelation that the Naugrim, the dwarves, are they don't like the sea. They don't want to go close to it. It makes them nervous and scared and terrified. And so there's one of these. It's called Nymphelos, and it's the size of a dove's egg. And the sheen was as starlight on the foam of the sea. And essentially, you see it's kind of like the OG Arkenstone. It's so valued that the chieftain of the dwarves of Belagost prized it above a mountain of wealth. It's like just this very special, unique stone that they love. So yeah, they're like, you know, we're straight, man. We'll build this city for you, and you've done so much for us that we're even, okay? Yeah, and they labored long and gladly, which is a really beautiful thing. I would love to have seen this, or to like see a depiction of this someday, you know. And I feel like Thingol and Melian, they're just really cool. They're great to these dwarves, and the dwarves are good to them. And we see so much animosity between, you know, dwarves and elves, that it would be cool to experience a time where they were kind of getting along, you know, be a beautiful sight, I would imagine. Yeah, so this goes into the description of Menegroth. I mean, it's crazy. It talks about where it's built, where the Esgalduin flowed down and parted Neldoreth from Region. There rose in the midst of the forest a rocky hill, and the river ran at its feet. There they made the gates of the Hall of Thingol, and they built a bridge of stone over the river by which alone the gates could be entered. Beyond the gates, wide passages ran down to high halls and chambers far below that were hewn in the living stone, so many and so great that the dwelling was named Menegroth, the Thousand Caves. And so this is something, too, I mean, being a huge fan of the Children of Húrin, this is, you know, Túrin spends time here. His mother and sister come here eventually. This is a place that is we've experienced before, so it's cool to see its kind of origin. And again, maybe that's why it is kind of an odd thing to think about elves living underground, right? And then it's like, well, it's because the dwarves crafted this place. And I think it's cool how we even get in this next paragraph a description of how it's not too dwarvy. Like, you might be kind of scared it would be too dwarvish. But the elves come in and they kind of put their own spin on it, and it's a beautiful mixture of the two, like the two heights, or the heights of these two groups of people building this one spot. Maybe that's why it's so beautiful too and so special. So the elves also take part in the labor. They work together with their own skills and wrought out the visions of Melian, images of the wonder and beauty of Valinor beyond the sea. The pillars of Menegroth were hewn in the likeness of the beeches of Orome, stock, bough, and leaf, and they were lit with lanterns of gold. The nightingales sang there as the gardens of Lorien, and there were fountains of silver and basins of marble and floors of many colored stones. Carven figures of beasts and birds there ran upon the walls or climbed upon the pillars or peered among the branches entwined with many flowers. And as the years passed, Melian and her maidens filled the halls with woven hangings wherein could be read the deeds of the Valar, and many things that had befallen in Arda since its beginning, and shadows of things that were yet to be. Wow, that's crazy. That was the fairest dwelling, again, like we said, of any king that has ever been east of the sea. It really kind of takes on this temple feel, like especially that last part where, you know, you got Melian and her maidens sort of like filling it with this iconography and these tapestries that tell the stories of the Valar and almost kind of prophesy of things to come. So I guess maybe that's another reason it's so elevated, is it goes beyond just dwelling. It goes beyond just like palace. It becomes almost kind of a holy, sacred place in that respect. So yeah, it's a crown jewel. It's really a crown jewel. There's peace in the realm of Thingol and Melian, and dwarves yet came ever and anon over the mountains and went in traffic about the land. So this is a real kind of swelling of prosperity. The only place the dwarves don't go is the sea, right? I said same out in the margins to this, that because I just can totally relate to this. They hated the sound of the sea and feared to look upon it. Ditto, my brother. It freaks me the hell out. It's too big. And there's no, like, rumor outside of Beleriand. They don't hear anything about the rest of the world going on. It's very, like, isolated, insulated almost, I should say. Very insulated. Sorry, guys, the throat's doing it about as much as it can. The third age of captivity of Melkor draws on. So, stuff's about to get real crazy, brother. The dwarves start to be kind of troubled. Oh yeah, they have this kind of knowledge that there's sort of dark things lingering. Like the Valar didn't finish the job when they kind of pursued Melkor and cleaned house, that they left enough of a remnant that, to quote them, there are fell beasts in the land east of the mountains. And your ancient kindred that dwell there are flying from the plains to the hills. This is where we get the Avari here in a minute. This is crazy. This description is nuts. I mean, this talks about like these creatures that start getting bold enough to pass into Beleriand. They go through the mountains and up from the south through the dark forest. So you got wolves. You got creatures that walked in wolf shapes. So I'm thinking skinwalker. I'm thinking dog man. This is very pertinent to like all the conspiracies that I sort of love to buy into and explore. Other fell beings of shadow as well. And among them are the orcs, okay? They, of course, will go on to rot ruin in Beleriand. At this point, there's still very few of them, and they're pretty wary. They're not, like, bold. They're not coming out and attacking. They're only kind of, you know, getting the lay of the land. It says they're smelling out the ways of the land, awaiting the return of their lord. They're waiting for Melkor to come back, Morgoth, right, before they get real brave. It's really interesting that the orcs, this is so cool, because the elves don't have any idea what they are, and they think maybe they are the Avari, right, who had become evil and savage in the wild, in which they guessed all too near, it is said. So, you know, I mean, if you think about that, remember way back to when the elves awoke and some of them kind of wandered too far and Melkor snatched them up and they were taken and changed and tortured and corrupted into orc forms. So it's kind of crazy. At first you're like, oh man, come on, dude. It's not the Avari. They're out there still. But it's like, well, there are some of them that got taken, right? I mean, there are some of the Eldar that's where orcs came from. So in a way, they were spot on with that. Now they start thinking about weapons. I thought this was a really interesting kind of contrast, right? Like, it's going to go on and talk about why they start building up arms in a minute. And it's totally different from the Noldor. Like, the Noldor start building weapons and shields and helms and armor because of Melkor, like, whispering lies to them and saying, like, oh, you know, you're gonna be betrayed and the Valar are lying to you and there's men coming and maybe even other elves, you know, all these little things that he's put in their ears. So they all started crafting this stuff in secret and thinking they were the only ones doing it. They thought that, like, we're the only small group of elves here that are doing this, right? Yeah, no, they're not doing it over there. Okay, well, what's that flag over there they got? That looks different from ours. Are you sure they're not? Okay, cool. Yeah, so that's what they were doing. And it's so different because it's a response to his manipulations, and it's literally a dividing of their own kind. It's a division of elvenkind. Like, they're literally fracturing because of Melkor's lies, and that's why they're building weapons and armor and flags and banners and all this really tribal stuff. But here we're going to see that the Sindar do it in response to a real threat of evil. And the beautiful thing is, it doesn't break them apart. They end up collaborating with the dwarves. So it's a much more, like, I guess if you're going to make weapons and arms and start thinking about defending yourselves and battle and all this stuff, the Sindar way is much more wholesome than the Noldor. And, yeah, I guess proximity to Melkor, I guess you could say that's why it had to be that way with the Noldor. Maybe it was too cramped over there, you know, there was a lot of paranoia. But I don't know that it would be any less scary in Beleriand, in the wide world, and hearing these rumors and then seeing some of these creatures and being like, oh crap, we're not safe. We thought we were free to just kind of dilly-dally around, and that's not the case. We're in, like, imminent danger. But the collaboration it forces or kind of inspires is really, really cool. So it's Thingol who says, we need to get some arms, which they hadn't needed before. And you got the dwarves coming through, and they smithy a bunch for him. You know, they're highly skilled in this work, though none among them surpass the craftsmen of Nogrod, of whom Telkar the smith was greatest in renown. So they're very warlike, right? The dwarves. I love how we don't like their origins too. Like, they've had stuff. They've been in the East with all these creatures too. Like, they've fought, right? So this is information they're bringing to them firsthand. Like, hey, we hang out in our caves, but there's crap out there, man. When we go outside and we journey westward or south or east or whatever, we're running into some scary stuff, and it's starting to come over the mountains. It's getting bold. It's going to start coming to see, all of you elves. And, and it says here, this is a very cool kind of, characteristic that is seated way back here. They fight fiercely against whomsoever aggrieves them, servants of Melkor or Eldar or Avari or wild beasts, or not seldom their own kin, dwarves of other mansions and lordships. So, you know, you don't want to piss off a dwarf, essentially. And we all knew that before, but here it is in black and white, right? Very clearly spelled out. There, the Smithcraft indeed, their Smithcraft, so the Dwarven Smithcraft, the Sindar soon learned of them. Yet in the tempering of steel alone, of all crafts, the dwarves were never outmatched. So they're untouchable, even by the Noldor, right? Which is crazy. And in the making of mail of linked rings, which they invented. This is something they contrived. The smiths of Belagost had kind of made up, and their work had no rival. You know, I think all the way ahead to Mithril, right? And how that was like this shirt of mail that... the Mithril chain shirt that Frodo wears. It's because it's made of Mithril, but it's also like this type of armor that they would have made that, was unmatched. So the Sindar they're well armed at this point, and they drive off creatures of evil and they have peace again. So they kind of caught it at a good point, and they're able to sort of push them back, and they hang up their arms. And there's this beautiful line that, all of these things, the bright mail, the long coats, the spears, the swords, the hauberks, they rusted not, but shone ever as if they were new burnished. And that proved well for Thingol in the time that was to come. So, high quality gear that they got. It's resting, but it ain't going to rest for long. And thankfully, it's so well made because they're going to need it. All right. Now we shift to some of the Teleri, we shift to some of the Avari, we get into, well, I'm sorry, not the Avari, we shift to who are known as the Green Elves. We've already heard tell of Lenwë and of the host of Olwë. They forsook the march of the Eldar at the time when the Teleri were halted by the shores of the great river upon the borders of the Westlands of Middle-earth. Little is known of the wanderings of the Nandor, whom he had led away down Anduin. Some, it is said, dwelt age-long in the woods of the Vale of the Great River. Some came at last to its mouths and there dwelt by the sea, and yet others, passing by Ered Nimrais, the White Mountains, came north again and entered the wilderness of Eriador between Ered Luin and the far mountains of Mist, the Misty Mountains. So they're kind of all over the place. When they don't cross the Anduin, and then even afterwards, they sort of just kind of spread out and linger there. They're a woodland people. They don't have any weapons of like steel. And all of these forces of darkness coming, scare them because they don't feel prepared. They don't feel like they're able to fight effectively. So Lenwë's son, Denethor, hears about Thingol and thinks, you know what, I'm going to get together a bunch of my people and, we're all scattered out, but I'm going to wrangle a bunch of us and we're going to go over there to Beleriand and see about this guy, this king. And see if his majesty is really what, and the peace of his realm is really what it's all cracked up to be. And they do, and Thingol welcomes them as kin long lost that had returned. And they dwell in Osiriond in the land of the Seven Rivers. So it's like the southeast, furthest east part of Beleriand, just past the mountains. So this is really cool too. It talks about the years of peace. Of these years, little is told, right? In those days, this is where we get the Kyrth, right? The written language, the runes. So Daeron, the minstrel, chief lore master of the kingdom of Thingol, devised runes. And the dwarves came to Thingol, the Nogrim. I keep calling them dwarves just because I like it. I think Nogrim's kind of negative, whatever. You know, the stunted people. They're the dwarves, bro. I should be calling them the Khazad. They learned them and were well pleased with the device, esteeming Daeron's skill higher than did the Sindar, his own people. So they value it even more. And this is where the Kyrth, they take this sort of written language alphabet with them. It was used little by the Sindar because it talks about this, the days of peace. You know, in the days of peace and bliss and gladness, you know, like works fair and wonderful are their own record. You're not really like keeping tabs and writing down events when things are relatively peaceful, because it feels kind of uneventful. And like your works of art and creation are record unto themselves, which I thought was a beautiful expression of just history in general and like mankind kind of. And he said, Tolkien says, and only when they are in peril or broken forever do they pass into song. So they're not using them right now. They'll use them later. The dwarves really value them. Seems like they're kind of more in touch with the darkness and obviously with like also like the written word and record keeping. Elves walk, the rivers flowed, and the stars shone in those days in Beleriand. Night flowers gave forth their scents, and the beauty of Melian was as the noon. The beauty of Luthien was as the dawn spring. King Thingol, he's a big deal, man. His power is at rest, whose joy is in the air that they breathe in all the days, and whose thought flows in a tide untroubled from the heights to the deeps. It's good times. It's good times. And even when that's not enough, every once in a while, Orome will come kind of passing through like a wind over the mountains, and you can hear Nahar, and you can hear the Valarama echoing. And it's like this idea that when you hear that, you know, evil is fleeing away. So it's sort of like this sense of calm and peace and, yeah, like inspiring fearlessness. So the bliss is about to end, all right? The bliss is about to end because here comes the baddies. This is where we kind of pick up to most of the action from like a couple chapters ago with Jake, and then even into last chapter, leading into the last chapter that Ez read. Chapter 9. So, yeah, the noontide of Valinor was drawing to its twilight. We're just now catching up to that. It's where we're meeting that point in time, which we've referenced before and experienced. Melkor slays the trees of the Valar, and Ungoliant is there to help him. This is where we get kind of how they come into Middle-earth. They fled from the north and came into the realm of King Thingol. Ungoliant does, actually. Ungoliant comes into the realm of King Thingol, and a terror and darkness was about her. But it's the power of Melian that kind of stays her, and she did not come into Neldoreth, but abode long under the shadows. She moves up into the mountains that would become known as Ered Gorgoroth, the Mountains of Terror. I know Ez brought up the thongs of Ungoliant last chapter. And so we kind of had this conversation, who wins in a battle between Ungoliant's thongs and Melian's girdle? You know, I don't know. It's a showdown. At least right now the girdle's winning, I'll tell you that much. But we put a poll out. 50% of you said the thongs. 50% of you said the girdle. So it's kind of up to you guys to make the difference. One of you's got to jump across the fence. Yeah, in that spot, though, like, life and light are strangled. It's poison. Morgoth goes up to Angband. He builds it anew. And above his nasty doors, he builds the towers of the Thangorodrim. The gates of Morgoth were but 150 leagues distant from the Bridge of Menegroth. So, right there. And when you look at it on the map, you're like, yeah, dude, they're neighbors, essentially. You know, you've got Morgoth essentially setting the board pieces. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna, you know, come back here, but hey, oh, look, I'm pretty close to my guy. I'm gonna start going after this leader of the elves. I've messed up the elves in Valinor. I'm gonna mess them up over here in Middle Earth as well. Yeah, it's crazy. So, this is when, yeah, they kind of make their attack. The orcs that have multiplied, they get strong. And their dark lord fills them with a lust of ruin and death. They issue forth from Angband. You know, he covers the sky with clouds that allows them to move under the cover of darkness. And all of a sudden, a great army comes into Beleriand and assails King Thingol. This is, again, a sort of a restating of this idea that the elves wandered free and wild. They dwelt in peace, and they were all over the place. They were scattered throughout the land. But the orcs, so they come down upon either side of Menegroth, and from camps in the east between Kelon and Gelion, and west in the plains between Sirion and Narog, again, get your map, they plundered far and wide. And Thingol was cut off from Círdan, so they separate him from Círdan and Elglarest. Therefore, he calls upon Denethor, and Denethor and his elves come up from Region, beyond Eros, and from Assyrion, and they fight this big battle, and it's the very first battle in all the wars of Beleriand. And yeah, it's sad. It's really sad. Eventually, the eastern host was taken between the armies of the Eldar, north of the Androm, and midway between Eros and Gelion. And there they were utterly defeated, and those that fled north from the great slaughter were waylaid by the axes of the Nogrim, the dwarves that issued from Mount Dolmed. Few indeed returned to Angband. So they wipe them out on that side. But the victory of the elves, it was dear bought, because the other forces that were led by Denethor were cut off and surrounded upon the hill of Amon Areb. There he fell, and all his nearest kin about him, before the host of Thingol could come up to his aid. So they arrive a little too late, which is a huge bummer. But Thingol makes sure that the orcs that causes damage, they don't get away. He whoops them. He just whoops them. He came upon the rear of the orcs and slew them in heaps. And Denethor's people lamented his passing, and they took no more king ever again. And some of them went back to Assyriond, and they never came forth in open war again, kept to themselves. They were very wary and secretive now. I mean, this was just like a sort of a breaking of them. And they're called the Lyquendi, the Green Elves, because of their raiment and the color of leaves. Many went north and entered the guarded realm of Thingol and were merged with his people. So you have some of them kind of being like, okay, I'm not going to wander. I don't want to be lost. Maybe they were driven by like the same kind of desire to, not for vengeance, but to seek justice for the Eldar as a whole. Maybe Denethor, to make sure that his life wasn't in vain. So a great host of them join up and become part of the Sindar. So this is where we get kind of the girdle being built up, baby, finally. My God. First, though, learned that the orc host west of the in the west was victorious, and that Círdan had driven them to the and had no I'm sorry let me back up the orc host of the west was victorious and had driven Círdan to the rim of the sea. Therefore, he withdrew all his people that his summons could reach within the fastness of Neldoreth, and Region and Melion put forth her power. This is where, she builds up the girdle. So Círdan's kind of off on his own. Hopefully he makes it. Hopefully he's fine and is able to handle himself, but they got to sort of put up walls. And it's this really kind of crazy, just power wall, an unseen wall of shadow and bewilderment that allowed them to be fenced in around Menegroth. And yeah, this inner land, which was long named El Gador, was after called Doriath. And within there's a watchful peace. Outside, there's peril. There's war. The servants of Morgoth are running to and fro. It's such a change. They had all this space. You know, the elves had all of this room. They had this fearlessness, this innocence, and just with the arrival of Morgoth and the untapping of all these, the boldening really of all these dark forces, now they're confined to a very small realm, and it's chaos all around. And also you're thinking about men who are going to come into the picture, and it's like, that's the world they're entering. You know, at first when you read Children of Húrin, you're like, why is Thingol such a jerk? Why is he like hiding and protecting himself and like not out there, you know, helping everyone else? And it's like, you know, the burned hand, you know, learns the lesson. And that's kind of sort of like the reality here. It makes me be a little more, given a little more grace to, yeah, to Thingol and the kingdom of Doriath. So, yeah, that's that, baby. Sorry, just there's a lot to keep track of. My little brain is overwhelmed, baby. new tidings were at hand that no one had anticipated. There's another arrival, baby. Feanor came over the sea in the white ships of the Teleri and landed in the Firth of Drengist, and there he burned the ships at Loskar. So, we've all caught up. We're all kind of in the same place. And it's about to get crazy, baby. This was a wild chapter. I'm glad that I read it. I'm glad that I used a map. I'm glad I listened to it before. I'm glad that I took my time going through it. I'm sorry if I was reading too much. It's just like, it's one of those chapters where if Ez and I aren't tag teaming it and one of us is able to kind of keep track of where we are while the other one, you know, kind of extrapolates. If you're doing both on your own, it's like, shoot, man, I just got to lean on the text, baby. And it's so rich. Like, it's just, it's, there's so much there. Like, you go through a huge amount of time, a huge, you know, geographical space, too. Like, it's all over the place. We even, you know, reference stuff that's off the map in Beleriand. That's far to the east, the lands that we recognize is all kind of referenced in this chapter. So, yeah, it's a wild one. But there we go. Chapter 10, done and dusted. Let's go, baby. There is no Bywater post this week because I can't figure out our system in the email. I'm going to be blunt and honest. I feel like there's some sort of girdle around it, to be fair. You know, darkness and bewilderment and confusion that I can't seem to break through, no matter how many thongs I have. And I just got to clarify with Ez, like, where are the unread Bywater posts? I don't know. Did we get, maybe we're done. We might be done. We might need you guys to send, like, you're out there listening, you're like, man, I don't know. Like, I don't even really want to talk to Lena Ez. You know, it's not talking to us. I mean, it is, but you're talking to all the uppers. Like, you're sharing your story. And so if you have a Tolkien story that you've wanted to submit for a long time, or even just a whatever, something that could be read in the Bywater post, kind of a longer form communication, get it our way. We love it. We love it. Send it to us. Strawberries with cream. Yeah, baby. This is a cheap one, dude. I mean, this is just dumb. With a lot of, like, a lot of fell creatures were brought up in this chapter. You know, like the wolves and the wolf-like shaped creatures. Again, Dogman or Sasquatch running around. It, like, really makes me wonder, like, what are these creatures? Just as fell creatures. Like, Weta would have a field day if they did a movie. This, again, we need a movie series in this time period. That's what we need. Please listen to us. Please just give us a... give us a wink or a nod, you know. It we're the humble hobbits of the podcasting Tolkien world. Just do that for us, please. We've been here forever. So anyway, they would be able to come up with some crazy stuff, and some stuff probably rooted in reality as well. But I just said, you know, if you could fight any creature in Middle Earth, who are you going up against? Who are you going toe to toe with? And yeah. This is going to be a very vanilla, basic white boy answer. I can't help it. I love vanilla ice cream, and I'm a very basic white boy. So, you know, be true to thyself. but it's got to be an Uruk-hai. Like an Uruk-hai general or chieftain, though. Not like one of the fuck... Whoa, almost swore there. I forgot what I was doing. I'm sorry. Not one of the... I don't have to bleep that out, though. That's great. Not one of, like, the lower, you know, sort of, I don't know, henchmen or whatever. I want one of the baddies, dog. Like, that's what I want Lurtz. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've fantasized about decapitating Lurtz. Just cutting his head off, you know. I mean, I replay that fight in my head all the time. Yeah. So, actually, I have I haven't told many people this. I have sort of, like, a... temptation fighting mental device that I use, and it's kind of like that. It's really weird. Anyway, how can you share the load? Just do something nice for a Tolkien fan. You know, you got us on Instagram. You got our Patreon. It's a great place if you want to financially support the project. Become a producer on Concerning Hobbits. Go to our spot fund and see if a donation matches your willingness or ability right now. And yeah, you get to be called a producer. That's pretty cool. And in reality, you are. Send us something. You can send anything except for Anthrax to the Shire at P.O. Box 96 in Amanda, Ohio, 43102. We still get our mail there. And that's for Ez, too. You know, Flannel Wizard likes to stay off the grid. He doesn't like getting hate mail, which he has gotten in the past. So when it comes to the Shire, I can screen it first. If it's a box of ticks carrying Lyme disease, I don't want that either. But at least it'll hit me instead of him. I always open the packages at the post office, too, away from the family. So if you're going to do something evil, just know it's if you're intending it for ads, it's going to happen to me, too. So we're sort of a package deal. And but that's not going to happen, Lane. Jeez, dude, don't manifest darkness, bro. Feanor, you little goofy guy. You're going to, yeah, if you send anything, it'll be something nice. A handwritten letter or a piece of art you've done or a lock of your lower back ponytail hair. You know, I mean, whatever the gift is, don't stop giving, guys. A huge shout out again to our lords and ladies of Gondolin, Susie, Amanda, Kevin, Aaron, John, and Steve. And a huge shout out to all of you. Again, this episode is brought to you by you. I don't know if you know that or not. I mean, you heard it at the top of the episode, but I don't know if you understand what that means, but it really is. It's brought to you by you. You guys. Yeah, you keep this thing special for sure. It's time for some Fortnite farewells. It's not going to be a Fortnite until we record next because I think Ez is ready for the next chapter. I've sort of taken longer than I normally would. I'm sorry again. Blame it on a sickness, boy. And so anyway, we have the everything up to the chapter recorded because we recorded with Matthew when he was here. So that's kind of a weird time jump. You're going to hear a lot of repeated stuff probably, but way more in-depth and way more fun. I think we get off color quite a bit. So if that's not your thing, maybe skip the quick counsel and all the pre-chapter stuff for the next episode. But yeah, so it won't be that long. It'll be pretty quick. But we do want to thank you for turning back time with us and catching up with Thingol and Melian and all the actual firstborn. Yeah, baby, I said it. Them dwarves is them Naugrim, the stunted people. Down with the sickness, bro. In chapter 10 of the Sindar, next time we'll be getting into the cosmos in an episode that will most certainly get us flagged. I don't know. It's in our feed. It's going to be coming up into Tolkien, of course. That makes sense. Of chapter 11 of the Sun and the Moon and the Hiding of Valinor. If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a shadow fax. We'll see you soon, and remember, Eru Fangs. So much stuff happened. Like, you had the creation of the alphabet and chainmail in the same episode, guys. The same chapter. Those are two totally different things. Like, what? You had freedom and peace and not a care in the world, and you had people getting killed and hiding. Polar opposites. I'm out. Much love. Peace.